think it's good. Yeah, I brought my beer with me, and yeah, that quote from Dave Newman. I just made it up. He never really said that, so I'm sorry. So I was really ready to read this essay for you guys tonight about cash for gold. And I thought there would be a lot of people who had some gold to sell, and I would read it, and it would, you know, it would be nice. We'd smelt it and everything. And then I saw this as a poetry series, and I was like, shit, I need poems. And then people are still reading prose, so it didn't really matter. So here are some poems. This is called Fast Food Affair. Once I fell for this trick, a bartering system between a petty pot dealer and myself, a sandwich artist. He'd trade me a joint for a foot-long sub, and I'd pretend to work the cash register for the camera. The weed was good, so was the food. I'd lavish it with banana peppers and the thickest tomato slices. I'd layer the lunch meat between American cheddar and provolone cheese. I'd spread shredded lettuce straight from the bag and sprinkle crab meat crumbs into the hand-squeezed streaks of mayo. One day, the joint was thinner, the next, anemic. So the sandwiches grew less decadent, the bread a bit harder. I'd settle for onion ends, the brown green peppers. Once I even stomped a slice of roast beef and served it up, the tread of my boot as visible as fine print on an affidavit. It all ended when he anteed a joint made entirely of seeds. I felt it took effort to burn me like that, and saw humor and sadness in the infidelities of our fast food affair. When I told him we were through, he understood. He took it better than most women I've lost, who had also used me for nothing more than a free footlong. So. These are all made up poems, so, you know, that's it. This is called Conversation with the Judge. But if it was true, it would be called Conversation with the Magistrate. But so it's not, so. It all started with a woman. She was in love with a church, but the only thing she had in common with Jesus was a beard. She always used to say she hated me when she drank and hated me somewhat less when she was sober. She prayed for me all the time. I made myself unknown, changed my phone number, covered my tattoos. I had a real job, W-2s and direct deposit slips, eyeing that 90-day pay raise, buy myself a car. She prayed herself to death. I lived in melancholy until I bought a car, a 91 shit-stained LeBaron. Signed my name to silkscreen promises, payments I'd break, and fine print that must have fucked me for at least $300. It had nice speakers, loud music, and no air conditioning when I distinctly heard the stand-up bass in a rockabilly band. The liquor store was closed, but I went in anyway. A small lapse in personal maintenance, I admit, Your Honor, but I drove all that way and badly needed whiskey. They stopped me for running a green light with a bottle to my lip. The cop put me in a holding cell smelling of piss-stained sheets and tough guy cop talk. I slept stretched on the prison ground, my socks and shoes a pillow, my bare feet between the bars. I understood then I deserved it and believe the whole experience has done me well, Your Honor. All I really want to know is if I can have my driver's license back. Okay, yeah. I don't project very well, so, yeah. So workplace post-it note number 36. Joseph, the trash piles exploding, styrofoam peanuts, addictive bubble wrap, the microwavable chow mein dyslexic Lydia never finished. It's loaded on the garbage cart like toy bundles for charity children. The dumpster always accepts donations. How to help old people on the phone. She thinks the email address is a website. She types the email address into Google. She speaks with the jitter of age, an elderly rattle, pebbles in a tin cup. She said, "I'm sorry, hun, you have to talk louder than that." She said, "Sometimes it's not the arrow, it's the Indian." And I didn't even mind if it was kind of racist, since she said it so sweetly. Not clap for racism. That's not good. So it's sweeping stoned at 5:30 a.m. gas station still life. The bleach on the sandwich bar glistens like black ice on back roads, and the smell of thawing bread blankets the smoke seeping from the freezer into the candy bar aisle in automotive corner. The radio plays a song I don't know, so I make up my own. A song about sweeping some sawdust tavern. My broom bristles brush dust from one corner to another as the sun turns this town golden, working alchemy in the streets and schoolyards, in the bedrooms of mill workers and white-collar commuters. Through these storefront windows, illuminating me and the broom and everything in this corner store like something holy, a patron saint of the proletariat working minor miracles for minimum wage. The miracle of hot coffee, the miracle of egg and ham on bagels, the miracle of the morning paper, the miracle of the lottery payout, the miracle of punching out at 6 a.m. The first light shines on me, cleaning bread dough from the floor. The boss arrives for the day shift, nods at me, genuflect in my speck of light, my time card, a golden ticket tucked tight into my back pocket as the clock hits 6. Workplace post-it note number 17. Dyslexic Lydia. Do not leave the toilet paper roll empty ever again. And when you hang the new one, please don't do so in an underhanded fashion. Even with your learning disability, you wipe your ass just like everyone else. This is called Dimebag Daryl of the Kazoo. My buddy is a virtuoso. He can play 2 kazoos at once, and it doesn't sound too bad at all. He can play Brahms, Stravinsky, Beethoven, all the classical movements. Calls himself Dimebag Daryl of the Kazoo. I heard him play 3 kazoos at once, but he was drunk, and it was gross, and I promised to never write a poem about that. This one's dedicated to Jimmy and my own old man, who is also a police officer. It's called Protocol. Police officers do not ring the doorbell. Cops knock every time. There is no mistaking it. The whole apartment shakes, and the cat scrams to a hiding space behind the radiator. They pound the door with fists like mallets and badges like supernovas under the porch light and midnight insects. They reach for the holster if they have to knock twice, so it's best to answer even in bare feet and boxer shorts. But when you do, don't step outside, shut the door behind you, and ask, "What seems to be the trouble, officers?" They really hate that kind of shit. for them. Workplace post-it note number 51. Gina, we are all so happy Jesus is your friend. But he's not here keeping the display window full and the bathroom floors clean or covering for your call-offs last week. So please stop setting the toothpicks in the shape of small crosses unless you want to be fired for everybody else's sins. Why I deserve a raise. I'd just like to say, I've done nothing but work hard since the day I got here, typed a resume that was never even read, and wore my only tie to the interview, polished shoes reserved for Christmas Day, funerals, and family reunions. I fake smiled and shook hands with 2 new supervisors, 3 team leaders, 10 coworkers, and 1 district manager. I showed for every shift on the weekends and holidays, both federal and religious. Work days I requested off more than a month in advance. I punched in hungover, fever struck, dead tired, still drunk from the night before, the same clothes as the night before. Even slept in the manager's office when it wasn't worth going home. I flew through speed traps, 4-way stops, blinking yellow lights, and one time I tried to outrun an unmarked cop car, which cost me 3 days' pay, all on account of making it here. I drove through snowstorms and monsoons, rode behind grandmas going 10 miles an hour, and even weaved through the path of a 4th of July parade, my patriotism trumped only by my work ethic. I responded every time the phone rang, whether I was on call, called in, or when coworkers called off. Even left my girlfriend's phone number so the store could reach me when I wasn't home, which didn't work out so well for me, but got my boss a piece of ass one night. On duty, I put in tough hours, swept and mopped every floor, been on my hands and knees with a toothbrush, cleaning grout on the tile, broke down 15 pounds of cardboard boxes, separated the glass from plastic from aluminum cans, and handpicked through every trash bin to make sure I got them all. I bleached the bathrooms of both sexes, picked up paper stuck to the walls by adhesives unknown to me, wiped down both sides of the toilet seat, handled the bloody trash in the ladies' room, and once accidentally cleaned the shitters the day Big Joe ate 3 spicy burritos. I don't even know how he managed to hit the ceiling, but I cleaned that too. I'm even sitting here now thinking of ways I can work harder for the upcoming quarterly evaluation. So when you do hand out those 20-cent raises, I think you should consider me this time because, man, I could use it. All right. How to drink rum at work. Fill your flask for a 5-hour shift. Anything more, you'll need the bottle. Steal a few 20-ounce Cokes. Dump half. Replace with rum. Steal breath mints. If coworkers or customers talk to you, ask them about themselves. They can talk. You can drink. Take out the trash where it's cool to puke into the compactor if you have to. If they discover you are drunk, tell them they are clever and offer them a drink. Yes. Last one, workplace post-it note number 16. Adam, that's me. I know you were drinking last night. The whole store smells like the French Quarter, and I found 3, make that 4 empty bottles of Coke around the store. Nobody drinks that much soda. When we find someone who will work your weekend, swing shifts, and overnight shifts, you are done.